Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, 5 o'clock hour, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. We're Old School live here at 11th and O Street, 1040 O Street, if you want to pin the location. We are brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th and Andromat / Old Cheney, and 168th and Maple up there in the O. Always be on the lookout for Fired Up Friday.
And Thursday too.
Yeah, fired up Thursdays and Friday. We got to make a name for it, but we got to get a Jay Foreman discount.
Foreman Depth Thursday.
Yeah. We got to get something.
Jake.
Jake's got something, but you know, they had the brat burger with the potato salad. I like that. I like that. So they got plenty of choices. Great butcher shop. It is the two favorite places for me. I shouldn't even be saying it because then, I mean, you would be better to find me or whatever. It is like Costco / Sam's Club and the Mercado over there, the butcher shop. Boy, when you go over there, man, I'm telling you, it is a grill master or somebody that likes to grill. It's a masterpiece. It's heaven over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like meat and I do eat pork. I'm going to eat everything, anything and everything they got is on.
Coolio dropped Gangsta's Paradise. Jay Foreman's dropping Grillmaster's Paradise.
That's right. And what was dropping today, we had Matt Rhule had his press conference. So he had some, you know, obviously interesting, you know, thoughts on the upcoming game and obviously where they're at. So we'll, what's the first one we're going to do?
Let's do the how do you match up against Maryland.
Yeah, that'd be good. I want to hear this.
Yeah, this would be about a minute and a half of Matt Rhule. How do they match up against Maryland?
Good players. I mean, they got a dynamic young quarterback, a five-star recruit who's athletic, but who's a passer. You know, when you have that combination of you're a passer first and you look to throw, but you're also athletic and extends plays. You know, they hit a lot of deep balls. Their three, you know, their wideouts, 1, 4, and 5, can run. 5 can really run. So they're explosive. That it's the passing game for them that's really opened up, and they can run the football too. Don't get me wrong, but it's just, you know, there are some challenges there. We're a pretty good pass defense, so it should be a good matchup. Then you flip it, you know, they have a bunch of high effort rushers that are relentless, and so their pass rush is pretty elite, which is why they're so good on third down. And we just talked about, hey, our ability to create and build and defend a great pocket. So that'll be a key matchup there. And then special teams, you know, we've blocked 3 kicks this year. Jameer Khan has, you know, I think he has a block and a tipped. So that's 2 blocks for him, I guess. You know, every week I go into Eck, I'm like, hey, I want to block a punt. You know, like I want to block punts. Like, you know, we're doing a great job of returning them, but, you know, trying to find ways, design ways to block punts. You know, they do a great job special teams wise, but Eck will always find a way. And Jameer, you know, when you have 2 block punts in your first 5 games at this level, was it 5 games, right? That's pretty impressive. And so we'll continue to try to find ways to get Jameer open. Ja'Cory's doing a good job returning. So, you know, just continue to build off what we're doing special teams wise, which will be a key factor in a game like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think Maryland's one of the, I want to say surprise. Well, I guess I want to say surprise because, you know, I think Mike Locksley has done a really good job while he's been the head coach there. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, where Coach Rhule was or Matt Rhule is, where you kind of come in, you're building a program, right? And then you start to, and obviously he's been there a lot longer than Matt Rhule. But I think when you look at the team last year, I think was a disappointment.
Ben Bloxley admitted as much.
By his standards, by, I guess, Maryland standards, probably what has been reshaped and redone maybe once or twice, because I think he exceeded expectations 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the Big Ten East.
Yeah, and you get the letdown of, you know, you lose to Ohio State and you went on the run, then you're able to kind of back, you know, then you got it going towards the end of the season, so everybody has that lasting memory. And when you look at it, when and I'm referencing 2023, they lose to Ohio State, okay, they lose to Illinois by 3, they lose to Northwestern by 6, they get just annihilated against Penn State, and if you're from Maryland, everybody hates Penn State, you know, from Maryland. You come and you beat Nebraska in a white-knuckle game on a cold day, turn around and lose by 3 to Michigan, eventual national champion, right? And you end up beating Rutgers, but you end up going to a bowl game again, and you kind of, you know, scathe away, and then you win your bowl game against Auburn. So, okay, you turn around. So that's what you've kind of done. But last year was interesting because they were very talented, I felt like. Mike Locksley is always going to have to be able to scheme up and have wide receivers. You had Edwards, the quarterback that's now at Wisconsin. Hemby, who I liked 2 years ago when he came in 2023, was a baller, and Felton left, right? Yep. But then you had Barham, who's the excellent potentially first-round pick or probably first-round pick rusher from Michigan that we saw 2 weeks ago. He was at Maryland last year, linebacker. And then their Ole Miss's starting left tackle was a starting left tackle from Maryland last year, and they lost also a defensive starter as well. And he admitted, we lost it was NIL-based, weren't able probably to pay, probably wasn't able to re-up during the season or whatever they needed to do, some turmoil in there. And then you turn around the next year and you hand the keys to when you could potentially be on the hot seat to a freshman quarterback, and it's rinse and repeat. And then he does something that he was working towards, because I remember listening to him when he first started to emerge, I think in 2022 season, maybe 21, when they had a really good season for them. He's like, we're just not there big enough on the defensive line. And that's what he was trying to do, you know, to kind of, you know, be able to compete against Penn State and Ohio State and the Wisconsins at that time, Michigan's and all that. And now he has a defensive line and a defense that leads the Big Ten in sacks, and they come in with 19 or 20 sacks. And 12 of them are from 3 of their defensive linemen. So that lets you know their scheme is tight. That lets you know that they have some players, and their strength could potentially be our kryptonite, and they do a lot of things. Their strength or our strength could be their kryptonite as far as being able to pass the ball as well.
Yeah, I think that this is a decent matchup for Nebraska. Just on the surface, Matt Rhule doesn't usually give the game away a lot, but he alluded to it there in that quote, your passing game is the strength for them. You think that that lines up in Nebraska's favor on the defensive side of the ball, except that Washington can absolutely make some plays with his feet. He's shown that ability. Yeah. The thing that really stands out to me about Maryland, though, Jay, is over Mike Locksley's tenure, September is always great for them. Yeah. They're usually in this position, October a little worse, and then sometimes it's by nature of the Big Ten East that they were playing in, but November's been wretched for Locksley at Maryland. His first year, 2019, they give him a little bit of slack, but Maryland ends up going 1-7 down the stretch in October and November. Okay, then we'll fast forward to 2021. Similar sort of story. They end up going 3-6 in October and November. Not great. 2022, they go 8-5. Look at this. They're a little bit better later in the year. They end up going, four and four, right? So you pull even and you end up going 7-5 in the regular season and you win your bowl game. That's sort of been the trend with Maryland, is they come out like gangbusters early in the year, but they haven't been able to sustain that success into Big Ten conference play. Is that a recruiting issue? Is that a development issue? I mean, I'm sure every team gets hit with injuries, so that's part of it. When you see a team so good in the early going, but consistently fade down the stretch, what does that tell you about the program?
Well, I think it gets extremely tougher, especially in the Big Ten, versus any other conference of the four, or when it was five with the other four when it was the Power Five, is because of the weather, number one, and number two, late in the season, teams have got a beat on you, and it becomes harder to move the ball. Now, they've been always been able to be very productive through the air. So then how do teams, you know, counteract that? They run the ball, right? To keep that offense on the side. The Maryland notoriously hasn't. I mean, Roman Hemby, I think, is a really good player and was good for them, but he wasn't that grinded out late October, November running back.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's at Indiana. He's doing decent, right? But, you know, he's more of a slasher home run hitter. But when you think about it, that's where the difference was. And he was trying to build across the lines.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a more, a little bit of circumstances. It's the style of play, but then also being in the Big Ten and then also being at some of those periods of time in the East. And, you got the three-headed monster over there. So right. You're going to play two of them a year. It's hard to do.
Well, you play all three of them back in the divisional era. Yeah. And now you get probably two of the three of them.
Right. So then it's tough. And then you got to go other road games and it's expanding. Mm-hmm. But, you know, right now he's doing a really good job of, you know, got him at 4-1, very competitive, probably licking their wounds right now. And he's got to, you know, rinse and, you know, repeat and get them reset, because that passing attack, you know, Coach Rules was talking about, those guys can run, but they're very productive though.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Matt Rule is also talking about Nebraska's passing game and not pushing it down the field consistently against Michigan State. Here's Matt Rule. I know that's been a big topic of conversation really all year. What happens when Nebraska is unable to push the ball down the field in the pass game? Here's the head coach.
Yeah, I would say the wind was obviously a factor. You know, I mean, I think you look at them, I think they threw for, I mean, there was at one point in the second half where both teams had under, I think, 85 yards. So, again, I'm not here to sit here and be like, I mean, we can't sit here and say, well, the wind was there, so we didn't throw. I mean, but I just think it was kind of one of those deals where it was like that. I think we called some of those, and we had some guys wide open, like the play on talk about the Dane, and we just had a protection bust. And then just kind of, you know, I think as games get like that, you know, and you're just trying to, Dana was just trying to find rhythm. You know, he's like, hey, let's get the ball in rhythm. Like, even on the play to Ja'Cory, like, if you go, I showed the team the three play sequence of, we throw a tunnel screen to Ja'Cory and he drops it. Ja'Cory Bryant doesn't drop many balls. And it's going to be, it looks like it's going to be a decent play. We come out on a naked and Dane's open. We throw it to Dane and we kind of, guys in Dylan's face and overthrown it. It's just like, it just feels so out of whack. Then we come out, we throw a double post rail route wheel with Emmett in the flat, 4x1. Lindemeyer has to block the end gets outside, and he kicks him out. Dylan goes up inside. Ja'Cory figures it out. He throws the ball down the field on that play, and it's an explosive play. And so then all of a sudden we're going, right? So I just think it was one of those games where you're just trying to find rhythm and, you know, is there a place to probably push the ball over the top of their heads maybe more often? Yeah, if people are going to allow us to do that. You know, I mean, we called on one of the sacks, you know, the one Dylan got, I mean, we called a double move to Ja'Cory and they rolled over the top of him. And so the pick is a go and a post over route. It's just, you know, he had to get backside to the end cut. So what we don't want to do is we want to push the ball down the field. We want to do all those things. But we don't want to, it's kind of hard. Like, hey, Matt, why don't we run the ball more? Matt, why don't we throw the ball deep more? Just trying to score more points than the other team, you know? So I just think Dana's elite at, like, hey, what's working today? What are we going to do? And let's just get the ball and play as much as possible when the chances are there. Let's take some shots over their head. But to not acknowledge the wind, I mean, like, literally on defense, like when they went into the wind, we were literally playing back shoulder man, like, just let them throw the ball over the top. And if you flip it, when they went this way, they kept overthrowing all the go balls, because all they were doing in man was trying to throw the ball over our heads. I have to say this, and it's not related to your question, but Sierra Wright was absolutely phenomenal. He got targeted 5 times, and he just absolutely was a shutdown nickel corner in the game. But, you know, it's kind of like Rutgers last year. It was just really, really a hard day for the passing game. But I think, you know, we try to find some screens. So I don't know if that answers your question, and I respect the question. I think we're always trying to find that. I do think people come out and play us one of two ways, like, hey, let's play quarters and let's kind of stay deep and force them to run it and force them to get the ball and play, in which case you need to make some plays. Or they play us in man and pressure us, in which case it's hard to hold the ball long enough to push the ball down the field. And so we continue to evolve and see if we can get better.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I just remember when Penn State was going through this last year.
Mm.
And I don't know if it was a caller, but I know they asked James Franklin about throwing the deep, right? Mm-hmm. He was like, all right, you know, he's like, well, we're just gonna just call nine routes. Well, the next week they were going deep. Pew, pew. You know, I think the wind's a factor when you do it. I think it takes a lot of experience on how to play in different types of winds, because we talked about with the big punt return, or one of them was Ja'Cory Barney, the punter outkicked his coverage, and you can overthrow, like Coach Rule said, guys a lot with the wind behind you. And then you can, you know, if you don't really drive the ball, you know, on timing routes, or, you know, or back shoulder it, or kind of 50-50 balls on, you know, going into the wind, you could be in some trouble, or, you know, costly turnovers. The most important thing he was saying that, you know, they were trying to get in rhythm. You don't get big plays down the field without being in rhythm. You know, the days of like in high school and Randy Moss and guys, I mean, that's Randy Moss could only do that, right? Run right past you and get you back in rhythm real quick. So I think, you know, you got to be patient. You got to make sure that you're not overextending yourself to appease the masses. Right. And so I think it's one of those things that, you know, you just got to keep working at. And I'm sure that, you know, the guys are chomping at the bit. But, you know, quite frankly, Maryland has some receivers. So you know that they're probably
Michigan
going to,
State.
Or no, I'm saying.
Oh, going forward.
Yeah, going forward. Yep. Okay. Maryland has some receivers, mm-hmm. So you know they probably got more than capable defensive backs. If you want to look at Michigan State, like I said, it coming out of the bye week, they made an emphasis to not get taken deep. Now worked out circumstances with the win, mm-hmm. really helped them, and they were playing better, and they were playing pretty good defense. They're going to play hard. They're able to get at the quarterback a little bit. But I think it's a combination of missing opportunities, not being able to get in rhythm. You got out of rhythm that one drive, the three passes, when you had it on the 26, I think, mm-hmm. you said, and then you were
punting from your 42.
42. You got really out of rhythm there, and then it was harder to get back in rhythm because they got it going. Mm-hmm. And so then, as a coordinator, I'm sure you're like, okay, let's get some good feeling going. You missed the home run ball. We didn't even miss it. You're just one tackle away to start the first half of mm-hmm. going house call. He talked about the drop and all that. Those are the things that you just got to do, like the simple plays, because those simple plays, you stack those two plays he mentioned back to back, then it opens up for the third play.
It absolutely does. And that's where the hope is that Nebraska has stockpiled its, you know, weapons chest with enough guys that someone can be in rhythm. Problem is, when Dylan Raiola is not playing his best game, he wasn't the worst we've ever seen him, but it wasn't great from him. When he's off, when he's out of rhythm, when he's frustrated and in his own head, it's hard for the other guys to get going, which is where run the dang ball guy comes out. Mm. And I think all of us in Emmett Johnson, right, had a pretty good game, 13 for 83, three touchdowns. His first touchdown I liked was that last one, Jay, that tied the game. I thought that was a really good cut from Emmett Johnson.
Yeah,
to have that up the middle, have the patience, have the vision, cut it back right side, then outrun the guy. I was a big fan of that run from Emmett Johnson. But Matt Rhule even mentioned, you know, they went into the game assuming or hoping they'd get 70 to 75 plays as an offense. Yeah. Some of that comes off the board with the blocked punt back for a touchdown. But Nebraska only ends up with, what was it, 24 passing attempts from Dylan Raiola, and then officially 31 rushes, but you take out the three kneels, that's 24 rush attempts yeah. that you're credited with. So 52 plays.
Yeah,
you got to know your guys are in rhythm, because 52 plays isn't a lot of time to get them in rhythm.
No, and that's just part of, you know, you're playing against a team that's going to come in and compete, and you weren't at your highest, you know, output optimum wise, and that's part of this is just part of playing in the Big Ten. They're allowed to bite back. You're not going to be able to, if you think you're just going to roll up there every week and just be able to play your brand of football, mm-hmm. you're in like for a rude awakening. I hate it for you. Or if a fan, if you just think that you're just going to, you know, their teams are just going to roll over. Maryland's not going to roll over either. You're wanting all these deep passes. They got 9 interceptions. 9. Mm-hmm. That's essentially 2 a game.
Yeah.
All right. So they're rushing the passer. Okay. They must be doing a good enough job to stop the run, because they have the ability to rush the passer. Mm-hmm. And they're intercepting the ball. You need to play to win the game.
Yeah.
Period. I don't care if you play 32 plays, 52, 72, or 92. Whatever it takes. And you can worry about how it looks afterwards, but the best way to do it is after the win. So you got to be, you know, like I said, no matter what you do, you know, you're going to have, you know, want things you want to get better at, but more importantly, you just got to get better at winning. And that's what Nebraska has been able to do so far.
Do you want to hear about the travel for Nebraska at all?
Yeah, because I'm jealous. They get to go. I ain't going. Let's talk this here.
Let's do two from Matt Rhule. First of all, the impact of his travel experience. Here's Matt Rhule.
100%. I believe with all my heart that champions behave like champions before they're champions. They have a winning standard of performance. Bill Walsh, it's how you do everything. It's why for the first year that I'm here, everyone's like, what is wrong with him? Because I'm screaming about a box in the hallway and about this. But like, I think all like the food that you guys have when you guys come into a I think all of it really matters. And when everyone buys into that, like, you know, I think it goes a long, 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 long way. Like, we're all just trying to win a championship. And so how do you win a championship? The championship effort and everything that we do. But when you travel, if there's no, you know, it takes a toll on you physically, right? Like the hydration. So like, you know, even like the little thing, Mitch is going to give them fireflies to put on their legs. So their blood's moving in their legs as they travel. Like, it's just all these things are real. And so just trying to maximize that.
The other quote on travel is, how has Nebraska minimized the impact of travel? Here's Matt Rhule on what Nebraska is doing. Huskers will be out there on Thursday, by the way, not just on Friday. So they move their schedule up a day. And what else is Nebraska doing?
Well, I think first, like, you know, it's one of the great things about being in Nebraska, we're centrally located. So we're not on these 6-hour flights. You know, like, I think about like some of these guys going West Coast to East Coast, I mean, how hard that is. Even in the NFL, you probably only do it like once a year. You know, you go from the East Coast to the West Coast or vice versa. So, you know, we study everyone. You know, we reach out to everyone after they do it, if they play. Hey, what'd you do? It's great collegiality amongst the league, because I think we all have to deal with it. But I think the number one thing is we don't complain about it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the first thing. Like, this is, you know, anytime you go play a game, there's several opponents in the game. And one of them is just, you know, the conditions, the travel, all that stuff. So it's just part of it. We've had a year to prepare for it. We know what to expect. You know, we were glad it's not a night game, because we come back and play on Friday night. We were hoping for an 11 o'clock game, but 3 o'clock will take. And the only difference being, Mitch, that we're going to go out Thursday, because, you know, when you arrive there, you know, you fly into BWI, you got to drive about an hour to Bethesda to get to the airport. And so, we know Washington didn't get in until about 1 o'clock in the morning Thursday night. So we're not a big Thursday operation. We like to go on Fridays and keep our routine. But this is one time and the only time this year that we'll go out on Thursday, just because of the nature of being on the East Coast and traveling in those areas. So we'll take advantage of Friday as a day to, like I said, when I start talking about the brotherhood of the team, just spend some time together and take the day to build, you know, lock in and get focused for the game. But I think that's, you know, that's one change that we've made. But when we go to the West Coast, we don't really do that. But again, we aren't having the same travel that maybe, I mean, I think back to my first year here, right? We flew to Illinois. We flew to Minnesota. We flew to flew to Colorado, and we flew, who else did we play in Wisconsin, right? I mean, they were all like a small plane, you know, 90-minute rides, right? Now it's a little different, but it's good. We're excited about it.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's I think he's been coaching for a long time, and then NFL experience, you know, you're able to call different guys, and, you know, the coaches, I'm sure, throughout the Big Ten definitely lend helping hand. So, I mean, whatever they need to do to win.
Yeah, I like the collegiality part, right? They're helping each other out and, you know, not giving away state secrets or anything. But the other part that stood out to me was the importance of divisions in the NFL. Matt Rhule even said you do that once, maybe twice a year, right? Yeah. If you're the NFC South and you're playing, I don't know, the NFC West, then in that case, or the AFC East playing the NFC West, you'll have two road games, you'll have two home games, maybe twice a year, you know, Buffalo to San Francisco and Buffalo to Seattle or some such.
Yeah,
like, I mean, you got to deal with it at some point, but the NFL has taken steps to minimize that travel by having divisions.
Yeah.
And I get it's hard in the Big Ten. They went away from divisions because they were in balance. There's never anything perfect. I get it. But if the Big Ten and its coaches are truly serious about the travel, they push for divisions again.
Yeah, you could do it, but you know, the big games are most important, and they got so much money now, that's not an excuse. They got a lot more support, nutrition, and all that, and they can they essentially can move the whole operation. You know, real quick, I remember going on from Buffalo to Seattle. We went out there 2 days. We ended up playing well, fresh. Mm-hmm. Actually, it felt like we were getting stronger as the game went on, and that's a hard trip from Buffalo. Greg Williams and them came in my fourth year, you know, first year head coach. We go out to San Francisco, we get there the day before, and we got blitzed. You understand me? I think we lost 35. I don't know. All I remember is T.O. seeing Terrell Owens doing the Thriller dance on a Thursday night. That's right, because we played them Thursday night. We got in there Wednesday and got blitzed. So there's a difference. And now what? Now if we went out there on a Tuesday, would we have won?
Maybe.
Maybe not. We went. You know, I felt like they were in warp speed and we were in slow motion.
But Tuesday's usually off day, right?
Not when you play on Thursday. You figure it out. So we got blitzed, went back home, and that just kind of rolled over after that. So they got, and I do know flying in or going to College Park, obviously I know that area and all those areas very well. The travel is a lot different with the amount of people. And especially, it's probably a little bit smarter going on a Thursday than a Friday because it probably adds another 30, 45 minutes. So, you know, hopefully it leaves a good play and they're able to jump on Maryland quick. So we'll take a quick break, come back. We're going to do a little NFL roundup, some NFL news, and you got a Monday night football game. Jay Foreman, Austin Norman, we'll be right back.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Well, we're back. Jay Foreman, Austin Norman. Quick segment here to get back on time. So the NFL news. My Buffalo Bills lost last night, man.
But Houston Texans won.
Yeah. Well, they did. I don't know what's up in Baltimore, though. Somebody's going to get fired. It's probably the defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they're going to also flip the roster or purge the roster.
You might have to, but isn't that gutsy? I mean, Lamar's in his prime.
No, I think more on defensively, you're going to get rid of some guys.
But, you can't afford to waste any of these years with Lamar.
No, you have to do something.
Right, something drastic. And you better hope it works.
Well, here's what I think. I think when you just look at the guys that you potentially could move, it's either Marlon Humphrey or Kyle Hamilton. Both of them are out.
Hate to move Hamilton.
Right. So that means Marlon Humphrey.
But you get more for Hamilton because Humphrey's closer to the end than the beginning.
Yeah.
Ugh,
man. So that's why you got to get rid of him. Then you could probably maybe move Starks into there. And then, you know, the Ravens have done a really good job of developing, drafting. And then what the Ravens need, to be honest with you, is Alexander to play like he should be playing.
Yeah.
Because you put him in the Humphreys position, then you allow Humphrey to kind of play that kind of nickel, you know, him and Hamilton kind of go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But their defense is, they need to probably get another stud defensive tackle. Nambi is out for maybe the year.
Potentially.
So mm-hmm. That's the guy that, you know, he's your all pro.
Who do you trade first, Kyle Hamilton or Roquan Smith?
It's hard to get rid of Roquan Smith.
It is, but you're also biased as a linebacker.
Because, well, he's the heartbeat of your team, man, of your defense.
But do you think Hamilton can be that?
No.
It's hard from the third level, to be fair.
Not from the third level, and that's not even his personality. He's a great player.
Fair.
I'd give Smith another year. You know, Van Noy was a little bit hurt. I think they're just a little bit long in the tooth, but defensive line, they don't have that guy, and that's what Ravens are able to do so. And then I feel like, for whatever reason, I don't know if they're trying to – I think they might have got caught up in this thing of, you know, Stanley being hurt, but I think also this other thing, like, okay, what we need to do in order to win in the playoffs, we need to work on right now. It felt like you could beat some teams that you could by doing it. Their defense has been porous. They haven't played with the same effort or physicality.
Well, they've also been injured.
Injured.
All heck.
But Ravens have always been an organization – of having guys, either free agents, priority free agents that they've developed, they plug in and replace. They've done that for decades.
Since 97.
You got to think since, like, you know, Bart Scott's, those type of guys come through and then they go mm-hmm. to other places and get paid and be great players. They just have not played well. It looks different offensively. I felt like they should have leaned on Derrick Henry early, and there's the main reason I think they should have. Teams coming out of training camp aren't ready physically for what the Ravens could have done.
Mm-hmm.
And they went away from it. Look, the stat that I said last week, they run the least on first and second down, but they're the second most effective.
Yeah.
So you talk about getting more explosive plays. It's set up on first and second down. They're not doing it, but they're the most effective when they do it.
Well, the basketball analogy to that is if you're a 40% three-point shooter, you're not shooting enough threes.
Yeah.
You'd rather have a 30 37% three-point shooter at, say, 10 attempts per game than a 40% shooter on three or four attempts per game, right? Yeah. And you have one of the hardest guys to tackle in league history. And like you said, in the first few weeks when you're still getting your rhythm, your groove back in tackling, you haven't been popped like that, you know, outside of a preseason game in 9 months.
Yeah.
Use what advantage you have.
Yeah, and you got to think you're in a division AFC North that you're not all the way out of it. Do you really trust Cincinnati with Joe Burrow being out? Eventually they're going to die off. Cleveland is Cleveland. So you're behind, you know, you're on a 3-game losing streak. Pittsburgh is not dominant, but they're 3-1, so you got to figure they'll be able to. Pittsburgh is, you know, going to be hard to knock off, and so you got to catch up and make up some ground right now. And they're probably the biggest surprise. I mean, obviously, I think New England beating Buffalo last night with Vrabel. I'm not surprised because I think New England's looked a lot better than forecasted. Obviously, the Colts are doing well. We'll see if Jacksonville's for real tonight. If they hang with Kansas City, Indy could be in trouble. If they're the same old same, Indy could easily win a division.
That's where I was going to go with my take as well. Feels like a pivotal game for Jacksonville. If they beat Kansas City, them and Indy have the same record at 3-1.
Yeah.
You know, now, do you trust either franchise? I don't. Indy's got to prove it. Jacksonville's got to stop beating Jacksonville. Indy's look dominant. Jacksonville's kind of squeaked by. And yes, they both have light schedules by virtue of, well, the Colts not as much, right? They finished second in the division last year at 8-9. But man, it feels like a huge moment for Jacksonville trying to step forward.
Yeah.
I still like Trevor Lawrence. I've got a lot of grief.
I don't love him though.
Right. I mean, he's got a lot to prove. He's also lost the most expected points added to drops of any quarterback since he entered the league.
Yeah.
Right. And some of that's on him throw better ball. Some of it's on his receiver. Some of it's on Jacksonville being Jacksonville. I still don't fully trust Kansas City. Xavier Worthy questionable with the injuries he just got added yesterday. Kansas City's still trying to find itself. And I do wonder too, Jay, is this kind of a trap game, right? Monday night in Jacksonville.
Yeah,
got Detroit coming up next as well. Feels like a sneaky Jag spot here.
And the Jags have, you know, they're obviously better this year. And they, you know, it's not a roster thing. I think it's more or less just a leadership thing. And the new coach, Cohen, is, you know, he's got a little swag to him.
He's no Cignetti, but
he's got the offensive play caller and you know, a little quirky too, but I like Trevor Lawrence. I never thought, like, I don't look at him as like a number one, but I think he's probably been better than everybody give him credit for. And I think the injuries have, you know, really stymied his, you know, long-term progress, but this is a big game for them. Kansas City's defense is for real. Jacksonville's offensive line is better. I still think Kansas City wins, but I think it's going to be a closer game. Real quick before we go to break, I want to ask you this. Who's more of a surprise at 4-1, Indy or San Fran?
San Fran.
That's what I was
going to
say.
I think due to the injuries, right? If you look at the Colts' schedule, they open up with Miami, bad. The win over Denver was surprising.
Yeah.
But Tennessee, bad. Rams, good. Raiders, bad. I mean, you're thinking 3-2 is on the table if Indy has a pull. So 4-1 isn't that far out of the realm of possibility. Man, all the injuries that San Francisco had, offensively primarily, a little bit on defense in that division. That's been the toughest schedule for them, but it's certainly been a little more difficult than Indianapolis's has been on a week-in, week-out basis. I'm floored that San Francisco is alive and kicking in any way, shape, or form. Right,
yeah, the two starting offensive interior, or one of their interior offensive linemen is on injured reserve. Two of their starting receivers are out. Brock Purdy's out. Obviously, Bosa's out. You know what I mean? And so, and then you lost Greenlaw. And so but they've also done a really good job of drafting and developing.
Yeah.
And you got, you know, Marquise Siegel from Omaha, you know, by the way, of Kansas State. He's starting and he has some big plays, but the fact that they're 4-1 with their newly paid quarterback, and then Christian McCaffrey was kind of brought along slow, and Brandon Ayuk is out. So their top three receivers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still, and George Kittle.
Yeah.
So their whole lifeline besides Christian McCaffrey is gone. But they've been making plays though. And, you know, they still have that, you know, winning pedigree.
Arizona does not have that same winning pedigree. I thought they were going to be 4-1 right now.
Yeah.
They've lost three games that they have let slip, including this last one. Like, dudes keep dropping the football before the end zone. You get come back on by the Titans. Now, Cam Ward's a baller. Don't get me wrong. I think Cam Ward's going to be a problem for a while if they get the infrastructure around him. But what a massive missed opportunity for the Cardinals to sneak up into that wild card conversation.
Well, three in a row. You lost. Yeah. I mean, listen, when you lose a game in the NFL, it's like the worst thing to lose three in a row and then to lose the way that they've lost. Obviously, this last one is going to get a lot more attention because of the lead you had, how you lost, dropping the ball before you go in the end zone. It happened before, you know, during the season. Mm-hmm. So now Gannon is under fire because of lack of discipline.
Yeah.
When you have professional athletes, highly paid professional athletes losing or doing that and playing losing football, now you go on the road to Indy. And you just lost three in a row to a team that's just as talented as you playing, have the winning feeling, and you're on the road at 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time change.
Back 40 burgers from Indy? Huh?
Is it right for the pick?
We calling it?
Is it right for the pick? I don't know if it's 40. I think it's going to be low 30s.
That's just one extra possession.
Yeah, I think it's low
30s. I just need one more.
Because here's the problem is Arizona offensively has not been explosive.
No.
So your last year's success or whatever, your last year's run where you became the it team this year or thought of the it team because of that young defense. You got to think last year they beat the brakes off San Francisco. They lost 36-30 against Carolina. They won 30-17 against New England. So they were able to, you know, they went and lost by one to Minnesota, and they had, you know, 4-game winning streak in the middle of the year. They beat the Chargers and the Dolphins and the Jets and Chicago four games in a row, but they looked a lot better, and now they're fighting an uphill battle in probably the second most competitive division in the NFL.
Yeah,
you can't give away games.
Can't give away a game, let alone
games. And you can't lose like that. It's like Chicago with the Stevenson against the Commanders. They never caught back track. Coach lost his job. Players lose security within the team. So we'll see what they do, though. But we're going to take a quick break, come back. We'll talk a little bit more in depth, or better yet, give our pick with the Kansas City Chiefs and Jacksonville Jaguars on Monday night. Jay Foreman and Austin Orman, we'll be right back.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, quick segment here. Monday Night Football, Kansas City Chiefs at Jacksonville. I think part of one of the things when you go to Jacksonville, especially playing on Monday nights, is like, dang, I've been in this hellhole for like 2 days. but you know what? Jacksonville, they do, they'll get fan support tonight. I think it'll be interesting to see. It's Monday night. Obviously, you know, Mahomes, Kelsey, and everybody else on Kansas City, they're not the defending Super Bowl champs, but Super Bowl franchise. It'll be interesting to see how Jacksonville plays offensively with that roster. Because you got ETN, he's playing for, to get paid. You got Bigsby down there who's kind of taking over. And then you got a plethora of receivers, right? But everybody's going to see Travis Hunter nationally. And I think it's going to eventually Jacksonville's going to decide whether you want to be a DB or receiver.
Mm-hmm.
They very early put him at receiver. So that lets me know two things. He's done some great things at receiver. It's a little bit easier, to make that transition. I don't know why, but I'll let you know nobody else on their receiver core is very good.
Well, Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah. But they don't have anybody else.
They got a one. They got a rookie and crickets.
Yeah, and so they either feel very comfortable with the DBs and the veterans they have there, and even in the nickel, to make that the secondary place where he's at. But it's gonna be interesting to see how they use him on Monday night
because against Spags.
Kansas City, to be honest with you, with Patrick Mahomes, they're more of like a defensive team now.
Mm-hmm. But do you trust Jacksonville enough to pick him to win the game?
Against Kansas City?
Tonight.
Nope. Nope. I know there's 15 ways Jacksonville can win.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised. Because I think that with Trevor Lawrence and if the weapons are playing, they're tough to handle. I like their defense. Lloyd is one of my favorite linebackers out there.
Hines Allen's still there playing pretty well.
You got Allen, and then you got Walker that's done a really good job. Who, when he was drafted, kind of wonder how good he'd be because he came from Georgia, only had like 4 sacks.
Yeah,
I mean he's the real deal. They got talent,
Jacksonville.
But it's still Jacksonville.
There's an article in The Athletic today talking about same old Jets. Same thing applies to same old Jags. It's Jacksonville until proven otherwise.
Look, Aaron Glenn was a pickoff master, Pro Bowler corner, and the Jets through 5 games don't have 1 takeaway.
Looking at you, Sauce Gardner. Looking at you, Quinnen Williams.
With that defense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if that's that's not a fun place to be right now, especially with AG. So anyways, appreciate you listening on Monday. Huskers win. Hopefully they get packed and ready to win another game. Jay Foreman, Austin Norman, old school. We'll holler at you tomorrow.